Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Today on the Matt Walsh Show, several more public school teachers have been arrested this month for sexually abusing their students. This is part of a massive, decades-long abuse epidemic that has claimed millions of victims, yet somehow it still isn't treated as a major scandal. Also, a man in D.C. fires an AR-15 at a car in the middle of his neighborhood. He's already back on the street. Hunger strikers at Princeton claim that it's unfair that their hunger strike has made them hungry, and a liberal punk rock band has put out a cringy song that proves why punk rock is dead. All of that and more today on the Matt Walsh Show. Once again, Pure Talk is investing in their customers with their own money and without charging you an extra penny. I'm happy to announce that Pure Talk is now providing international roaming to over 50 countries. As you plan your summer travel this year, make sure your wireless provider has you covered at home and abroad. Pure Talk already puts you on America's most dependable 5G network, but now they're offering coverage in over 50 countries as well. Enjoy the freedom of unlimited talk, text, and ample 5G data for just $20 a month with Pure Talk. This is a deal that's hard to beat, costing you less than half of what you'd pay with other networks. Not only is their customer service team ready to assist you with a seamless switch, but they also have fantastic savings on the latest iPhones and Androids. Ready to make the switch? Well, join my cell phone company, Pure Talk, and start saving today. Visit puretalk.com/Walsh to explore their offers. When you make the switch, you'll enjoy an additional 50% off your first month. Don't miss out on the opportunity to save on wireless at home and abroad. Visit puretalk.com/Walsh. That's puretalk.com/Walsh today. It's always interesting to notice what kind of data the government tracks and what kind of data gets completely ignored. Every couple of years, for example, we get something called a national climate assessment. If the sea level rises by a millimeter off the Oregon coast, you'll know about it. We also receive regular government reports on the number of women who decide to take STEM classes, and also the popularity of non-binary and pansexual gender identities in places like Honduras. They actually track that. What we haven't received, though, for two decades, is a comprehensive update from the government on the number of children who are sexually abused in government schools. Now, it was all the way back in 2004 that the Department of Education released a report finding that between kindergarten and 12th grade, 9.6% of students nationwide were subjected to sexual misconduct by a school employee. That's 1 in 10 students, totaling more than 5 million child victims in the system at any given time. And that is the government itself telling us this. Teachers, coaches, and bus drivers were the most common offenders. A finding like that should have led to a national outcry and immediate changes. And indeed, the Department of Education's report recommended several new policies for screening employees and standardizing policies to make these kinds of incidents easier to report and keep track of. But none of that ever happened. And the federal government has barely shown any interest in the topic in the 20 years since. Now, there certainly was no broader cultural reaction to the Department of Education's report either. And, you know, that's a big contrast to other scandals involving systemic sexual abuse. A decade ago, a popular film called Spotlight dramatized the work of investigative journalists at the Boston Globe. The journalists discovered a cover-up of child sexual abuse in the Catholic Church, and they won a Pulitzer for their reporting, back when winning a Pulitzer actually meant something. And then the movie about those journalists won 6 Academy Awards. And of course, the Catholic Church scandal received significant attention far beyond that movie and the Boston Globe. A few years later, we got a bunch of Me Too-themed movies that no one really wanted, including She Said and Bombshell. Adult women in Hollywood were victims of pervasive abuse, we were told, and it needed to end. And in many cases, it was true that this abuse was actually happening. And the public outcry in defense of the female victims of sexual misconduct in Hollywood was also immense. Everyone seemed to care about that a lot. But again, There has been no equivalent movement to end the sexual assault of children in schools, particularly public schools where most of the abuse happens with the help of our tax money. Why would the sexual abuse of adult women in Hollywood receive so much attention while the sexual abuse of children in the government school system receives basically none? Now, every so often for the past decade, I've done a monologue or written a piece asking this question. When exactly will the movement to end this child sex abuse epidemic arrive? I've wondered when the public will start to care even a little bit about the rampant sex abuse scandal in the public school system. You know, that place where 50 million American children spend the majority of their formative years. And so far, the answer has been not yet. Even though every other day we are hearing about another child who's been sexually abused by a teacher. So here's just the latest example. And this is from earlier this week. Watch.
Hudson, Wisconsin, accused of kissing and exchanging secret messages with one of her students. Let's get a check-in right now with Audrey Russo, who's in Hudson Live right now. Audrey.
Jason, I spent the overnight hours combing through the most recent court filing, and here's what I found. Right now, 24-year-old Madison Bergman is out of jail. She's out on a $25,000 signature bond. She's charged with first-degree child sex assault. Now, here's how we got to this point. Police say that Bergman's abuse of this fifth-grade student came to light really just in a matter of days. The male victim's parents found text messages between him and Bergman on Monday morning. Then on Wednesday, the parents brought those texts to Rivercrest Elementary School administrators. Those texts include conversations about the two kissing, touching, making out. Bergman was questioned on Wednesday. She told investigators she was given the child's phone number after a trip to Afton Alps with the child's family. She was then placed under arrest.
Here's one of the text messages. Quote, one of my cousins is in the fifth grade, and I can't imagine a man talking to her how we talk. I know we have a special relationship, and I do love you more than anyone in the world, but I have to be the adult here and stop. Now, those are her words to a kid who would be 10 or 11 years old. Apparently, this woman got the child's phone number, as we heard, after the family invited her to go on vacation with them for some reason. And that was the same month that she got engaged to her boyfriend, by the way. Now, there are so many stories like this just this year alone and even the past month that it's impossible to cover all of them in this show. If I spent the whole hour on it, I couldn't do it. But I'll go through some of them because it's important to understand the scale of the problem. For example, just a couple of days ago in Gatesville, Texas, a teacher was arrested for sending sexually explicit messages to a 15-year-old student. Watch.
The Gatesville Independent School District junior high school teachers facing charges of having an inappropriate relationship with a student. Police arrested Christine Page Cockrell, who was an earth science teacher, on Friday. A statement was issued by Gatesville ISD stated that on April 11th, the district was informed that a student claimed he received what was termed a, quote, inappropriate online communication from a teacher. The teacher was immediately placed on administrative leave. On May 2nd, two warrants for improper relationship between educator and student were issued to Cockrell, and she was arrested the next day. There are no allegations of inappropriate physical contact at this time. One of the victims was a student of Gatesville High School. The other currently lives in Ohio and attends a high school there.
So this is an eighth grade teacher who, by the way, appears to be old enough to be somebody's grandmother, who was allegedly propositioning children for sex using Instagram direct messages and asking them to send her pictures of their genitals. She also sent nude pictures of herself. And the charges are actually worse than what you just heard in the video. One of the charges she's now facing includes possession of child pornography with intent to distribute. Now, as of now, this teacher hasn't been accused of physical sexual assault of a child, but we'll see what the investigation turns up as it continues. There are plenty other recent examples of physical abuse happening, though. 3 weeks ago in Omaha, for example, a 45-year-old married substitute teacher was caught in her car having sex with a 17-year-old student. Here's that story.
Crime Tracker tonight. A substitute teacher in Omaha is behind bars after police say they caught her in a car without clothes on with a teenager. Douglas County Sheriff's deputies say they found a car parked on a dead-end road just before 3 a.m. in Elkhorn. When deputies arrived, they found two people in the back seat. One of them attempted to drive off but crashed into a tree. After the crash, authorities say they found a teen an hour later in a nearby neighborhood, wearing only underwear and a t-shirt. Back at the scene, police identified the other occupant of the car as Aaron Ward. Police say Ward told them she had sex with the teen. Omaha Public School Public school employee ID cards were also reportedly found in Ward's vehicle. She was charged with felony sexual abuse by a school employee.
In this case, after the police showed up, the student apparently got in the driver's seat of the Honda Pilot, half naked, crashed it before hiding from police for an hour. And, you know, you'll hear from some corners of the internet that this kind of sexual abuse is no big deal because 17 is considered legally old enough to consent to sexual activity in some states, including Nebraska, where this happened. So they'll say, and some people have said, that it's a victimless crime. Even though none of the people saying that would want their son or daughter to be found having sex with a middle-aged teacher in the backseat of a Honda Pilot on a dead-end road at 3 a.m. Further, we should note, many of the victims in systemic sexual abuse scandals that have attracted widespread attention have been even older than 17. Again, the Me Too movement began because of the experiences of mostly adult actresses, many of whom willingly had sex with male producers in order to procure film roles. And that was seen as a major scandal, a major national scandal, but this sort of thing isn't? How so? And yet, this dismissive attitude has led to so much underreporting of teacher sex abuse in schools, and we can also measure that. Business Insider, of all places, just published an in-depth expose of decades worth of sex abuse accusations at just one school. This is Rosemead High School in Los Angeles. Now, there won't be any spotlight-style movie of Business Insider's report, we can assume, but credit where it's due, it's worth reading in its entirety. The report shows, among other things, how often parents are reluctant to call authorities to report inappropriate behavior in schools, even when it's right in front of them. They don't want to be seen as challenging school officials for some reason, and schools are all too happy to take advantage of this. On the relatively rare occasion that they do receive complaints, schools often cover them up. In Los Angeles, at one school that went on for decades, as nearly 24 victims piled up that we know of. Now, another excuse I've heard to explain why the sex abuse epidemic in schools isn't treated as a major scandal is that supposedly the perpetrators are being arrested and prosecuted and convicted. There's no cover-up, you know, so it's not a scandal, I'm told. But that's not true. That is just a lie. It is a lie. There are cover-ups happening all across the country. You don't get thousands of abusers in your system without cover-ups. If there was a habit of smoking these people out and holding them accountable, you wouldn't end up with 5 million abused kids in the system, obviously. These cover-ups happen all the time and are happening right now all over the country. As Fox 9 in Minneapolis found just this week, in response to allegations of sexual misconduct concerning teachers, schools can choose not to renew teachers' contracts instead of firing them outright. And that avoids all of their, you know, legal reporting obligations. Quoting from the Fox 9 from just a couple of days ago, quote, when a former teacher was charged with having sex with a student earlier this year, police records indicated that he had already been fired from a St. Paul charter school, but he wasn't. Personnel records obtained by the Fox 9 investigators reveal Brandon Bunny was not actually terminated by the Hmong College Preparatory Academy. Instead, his teaching contract was rescinded last May after a staff member alerted school leadership about boundary concerns with a student. Had Bunny been terminated, the school would have been legally required to report him to the state teaching to the state teaching board that decides which teachers are allowed in classroom. But that didn't happen because he wasn't technically fired. This is how most jurisdictions handle child sex abuse in schools. They do what the Catholic Church did in many cases. They shuffle the abuser from one place to another without telling anybody, just as abuser priests were shipped from one diocese to another for the same reason. And even when the teachers are punished, in many cases, they aren't punished to any significant degree. In March, a ninth grade teacher in Lincoln, Nebraska, who had sex with a student 10 times, was just sentenced to probation plus 90 days in jail. That's it. And late last year, a 48-year-old teacher who had sex with a 15-year-old student was sentenced to 3 years probation with no jail time. The teacher doesn't even have to register as a sex offender. And by the way, if you think that this light treatment is because the abusers in the public school system are often women, well, it's actually not that simple, because the 48-year-old predator in that case was a man. One of the few jurisdictions that actually takes this kind of abuse seriously is Florida. Here's a report from Hillsborough County from just 2 weeks ago. Listen.
Former Hillsborough County teacher is behind bars after the sheriff's office says he had an illegal relationship with one of his students.
Yeah, it came to light as deputies responded to Durant High School for an unrelated call. Annie Mapp joins us now live at the Hillsborough County Courthouse, where the suspect had a first appearance. Annie.
We're talking about 25-year-old Jaime Hernandez Cabrera. He taught agriculture at Durant High School and is accused of having a sexual relationship with a student on school property and during school hours.
This is absolutely disgusting, and this community will not stand for this.
Hillsborough County investigators say 25-year-old Jaime Hernandez Cabrera met the now 16-year-old victim on Snapchat in the fall of 2022.
Whether or not she consented does not matter in this situation due to her age. She is young. This relationship began when she was younger than she is now.
The suspect and victim then allegedly engaged in a sexual relationship that lasted several months and continued when Hernandez Cabrera started teaching at the victim's school in August of last year.
He's facing mandatory life in prison. That is because our legislature said we will not tolerate teachers who prey upon their students. Because he was her teacher, he actually had her in a class this year.
Facing mandatory life imprisonment. Now, that should be the norm in every single one of these schools, K through 12, where a teacher sexually abuses a child. But it's not. And that's why you keep hearing so many of these stories. Every video I've shown you has been from just the past month. That's how common this is. And there are dozens of these stories every month. And of course, those are just a small fraction of the sexual misconduct cases that get reported. So you have to ask, has anything changed since the Department of Education's report in 2004, finding that at the time, 10% of children are abused in schools? 5 million at the time. What happened? Has it gotten any better? Probably not. Has it gotten worse? Well, it seems that way. Again, the government doesn't seem interested in finding out, but within the past year, a nonprofit called the Defense of Freedom Institute conducted its own investigation into the data from public schools. They analyzed various reporting numbers that the government makes available, but only if you know where to look. And here's what they found. Quote, between 2010 and 2019, the number of complaints filed with the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights alleging sexual violence against K through 12 schools more than tripled. Now, I'm going to stop there because it bears repeating. The number of alleged instances of sexual violence in public schools, and this is just that have been reported, has more than tripled in the past decade. It has not gone down. It has not stayed the same. It has dramatically increased. And we're not just talking about inappropriate communications here. The report continues. For 2015 to 2016, the Civil Rights Data Collection reported 9,649 incidents of sexual violence. Of that number, 394 constituted instances of rape or attempted rape. For 2017 to 2018, the numbers were 13,799 and 685, respectively, an increase of 43% and 74%. So, the report goes on to find that local teachers' unions often work to conceal sexual abuse by permitting employees to resign, which is the same practice that Fox 9 discovered this week in Minnesota. Quote, unions use collective bargaining and non-disclosure agreements to conceal the records of abusive employees, and union leaders wield their powerful influence in many state legislators to stymie legislation. Now, the solution, as outlined by the Defense of Freedom Institute, is as straightforward as it was in 2004. Congress should require local education agencies and school districts to catalog and report all school-level data on sexual abuse and violent crimes. Any school district or local education agency that conceals these crimes or allegations concerning these crimes should lose federal funding immediately, and that is just for starters. Like, that's the first thing, and certainly not the last. But Congress has shown no interest in passing a law like that because there has been no national campaign about child sex abuse in schools. Certainly, there's been nothing on the level of the Me Too movement or the coverage of the Catholic priest sex abuse scandal. And that's even though far more Americans have children who are subjected to potential abuse from public school teachers than they do children who might be subjected to abuse from movie producers or even Catholic priests. I have to repeat once again, 50 million kids are in this system. To be clear, as much as I've talked about the many excesses of the Me Too movement, it's good that the predators in those institutions have been exposed and to some limited extent at least brought to justice. But it just boggles my mind that widespread sexual predation in the public school system, a system millions of parents entrust their children to, has not attracted even a fraction of the interest or the outrage. The only way to prevent even more children from being abused is to change that as quickly as possible. Now let's get to our five headlines. When you're running a business, time is money. That's why I'm so excited to introduce you to Ramp. If you're a finance professional looking for a better way to maximize productivity and cut wasteful spending, then Ramp could be for you. Ramp is a corporate card and spend management software designed to help you save time and put money back in your pocket. With Ramp, you can issue cards to every employee with limits and restrictions. You can also stop wasting time at the end of every month by automating your expense reporting. Ramp's accounting software automatically collects receipts and categorizes your expenses in real time, so you don't have to. You'll never have to chase down a receipt again, and your employees will no longer spend hours submitting expense reports. The time you save each month on employee expenses will allow you to close your books 8 times faster. Ramp is so easy to use. Get started in less than 15 minutes, whether you have 5 employees or 5,000. And now get $250 when you join Ramp. Just go to ramp.com/Walsh, ramp.com/Walsh. That's ramp.com/Walsh. Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members FDIC. Terms and conditions apply. I want to start with a report out of D.C. that should shock you, but it won't. Here's the local news report on this. Watch.
New at 5:30, he's accused of firing 26 shots from an AR-15 rifle into a public D.C. street. The U.S. Attorney's Office says they have multiple videos of him doing it.
Yeah, and you can hear it right there. And now neighbors are rightfully outraged after a judge released the defendant before trial. Our chief investigative reporter, Eric Flack, has obtained stunning video of the alleged incident.
Yeah, so the U.S. Attorney's Office is trying to reverse the judge's decision based on what we see here, right?
Yeah, they are, Leslie, and they're trying to do it fast. The U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia has filed an emergency order to reverse the magistrate judge's decision to grant the 18-year-old shooting suspect pre-trial release. We want to warn you, this story contains images and sounds of gunfire. 18-year-old Amante Moody is accused of firing 26 shots from an AR-15 semi-automatic rifle at an SUV driving away on Independence Avenue in Southeast on April 22nd. Prosecutors say the 2 a.m. incident was captured on 3 different cameras. 2 of those videos have been obtained by WUSA 9. No injuries were reported, but Moody was charged with assault with a dangerous weapon and possession of a firearm with a crime of violence. Both are felonies. Moody was initially detained after his arrest, but in a hearing last week, Magistrate Judge Lloyd Nolan granted a public defender's motion for pretrial release, placing Moody on round-the-clock home detention in Maryland with GPS monitoring and a stay-away order from occupants in the car. Monday, the U.S. Attorney's Office asked for an emergency hearing to revoke Moody's pretrial release, claiming in court documents, home confinement and GPS monitoring cannot reasonably assure the community's safety because pretrial services, which is supposed to keep tabs on Moody, only works during, quote, normal business hours. Prosecutors also say that despite defense attorney arguments which emphasize Moody's family support system and lack of criminal history, prosecutors say none of that stopped Moody from allegedly emptying that AR-15.
Yeah, the family, I'm sure there's a great family support system. That's why you've got this guy out in the middle of the street firing an AR-15. That's a real good indication that there's a family support system. This isn't really the point, but well, it sort of is. It's part of the point that the stupidity of these criminals is just staggering. We hear in the report that he hid the weapon after doing this, which means that he was trying to get away with it. Like he wanted to get away with it. He thought he would. So he stashed it. Yet he's in the middle of the street with multiple cameras all around and houses everywhere, and so therefore plenty of witnesses, and he's just firing a rifle. And yet he imagines that he can run, and he's apparently right outside of his own house, and he walks back into the house, and there's a camera right there watching him go. So this is a very, very stupid person. And more importantly, he has no conscience. Like by sheer luck, it just so happens that he didn't kill anybody. But obviously, you shoot an AR-15 in the middle of the street in a crowded neighborhood, He could easily kill someone. It's shocking that he didn't. And you could kill anyone. A bullet could go through a window and you could hit a child sleeping in bed. I mean, so the shooter, Amante Moody, obviously didn't care if he killed anyone. No concern for anyone else. No concern for anyone else's life. Total disregard for human life. And this is the lethal combination that terrorizes all of our major cities. Very dumb people who are also completely morally indifferent. In a lot of ways, it's the worst of all worlds. Okay, at least on a collective level, it is the worst. It's the worst combination collectively. For a community, it's the worst combination. Very, very stupid, very evil together. And then you've got lots of people with that combination. Now, because you might think, well, when you're that indifferent to human life and that evil, it's better. It's like better for everyone else if you're stupid. You might think that a smart sociopath would be more dangerous. And a smart sociopath would be more dangerous if you are the specific target. Like if there's someone out there who wants to kill you and they're a sociopath, it would be better for you if they're a very dumb person like this guy rather than a smart one. But on a collective level, like if I had to choose, I'd rather live in a neighborhood with a smart sociopath than a dumb one, because dumb ones do stuff like this. Although I prefer neither. That would be my preference. And if there's a sociopath who already essentially has 26 counts of attempted murder, which is what that was, I mean, each bullet you fire into a neighborhood is attempted murder. That's the way it should be charged. And obviously, as someone who does that, shouldn't be in anybody's neighborhood at all anymore. But the judge decided otherwise. Why did the judge decide that? What possible reason could there be? Like, what's the... We know what the risk is if you don't put, remand this guy to custody and keep him in jail. We know what the risk is. The risk is that he'll kill somebody. What's the risk of putting him in jail? Like, what's the compelling opposing interest here that would make the judge say, you know what, it's worth risking the lives of innocent people because of this? What is the this? The judge is knowingly putting the community at risk. And this is where the stupid factor comes into play again. Would the shooter, Moody, would he go out into the street and randomly empty another magazine? Would he commit another flagrant act of potentially lethal violence? Would he do that? I mean, he'd only be adding more prison time. It would be an insane thing for him to do. It would be of no benefit to him whatsoever to go in and do anything like this again. So, but would he do it? Yeah, of course he would. Why would he do it? Why would he go out of his way to make everything worse for himself, not to mention for his neighborhood? Well, because he doesn't care about anybody else's life, including his own. And he's a moron. So putting him back on the street, it's like throwing a grenade into a house, not knowing if anybody is inside. It is an act of disregard for human life, just as flagrant as firing the rifle in the street. On a moral level, both the judge, like morally, the judge and this guy are the same. This is the combination we're dealing with. Criminals with no soul and no conscience who don't care about human life. And those criminals end up in courtrooms with judges who also have no soul and no conscience and don't care about human life. And they're also morons, by the way. This is the system that we're dealing with. Okay, let's travel up north from D.C. to the state of Vermont, where forgivable, quote unquote, forgivable home loans are being offered to certain people, but only if you're, of course, not white. Listen.
Housing Trust is expanding a program to help BIPOC Vermonters become homeowners. It's called the Homeownership Down Payment Program, which provides a $25,000 forgivable loan to buyers who are Black, Indigenous, or people of color who are buying a permanently affordable home through the Champlain Housing Trust or its partner agencies across the state. Homeowner Marnie Avila says without this program, she would never have bought a home.
My house in the U.S. is like super stressful and also very challenging. And financially, it was just impossible for us. So they did provide a lot of financial support. We definitely knew that we wanted to stay every month and we wanted to move to Burlington. So this is our American dream.
The expansion was made possible in part through a donation of $1 million given by philanthropist Mackenzie Scott.
So when have we had enough of this is my question. This is obviously illegal. Obviously. Just like the programs we talked about yesterday, New York City granting contracts only to businesses that are owned by minorities. All of these kinds of programs, and they're all over the country. They're in every state. They're everywhere. All of them are blatantly illegal. You cannot exclude people from receiving a loan because of their race. You cannot do that. It's clearly illegal. Obviously. This is as direct and explicit as racial discrimination gets. You are openly saying, here's a loan. The only people who can't get this loan are whites. Of course, that's not legal. You can't do that. Needless to say, any program that tried to give loans only to white people would be shut down and sued out of existence immediately. We all know that. There's no chance. There's no chance it would survive any kind of legal challenge. But this is allowed to happen in large part because the victims of this discrimination aren't suing. None of these racial discrimination programs would hold up in court, even in our court system, as corrupt and stupid and infected with activist judges as it may be. It still would not hold up. It can't. There's just no defense of it. You can't defend it. The whole thing comes crashing down once the white victims of this racist discrimination start suing. And we are seeing a little bit of that. We're starting to see here and there the victims of this discrimination sue. And guess what? When they sue, they win. Because of course they win. This is obvious racial discrimination. You can't do it. But it's not happening nearly enough. Like, someone needs to step up to the plate on these kinds of things. I can't sue for this. I don't live in Vermont. I wouldn't count as a victim of this discrimination. So the victims need to speak up for themselves. And the problem is that, like, why aren't there lawsuits all over? Why aren't there thousands of lawsuits over this? Given how easy it is to win, I mean, you'd think there's all the incentive in the world to sue over this kind of thing. You're definitely going to win. You stand to win some money off of it also. Maybe not that much or maybe a lot, depending on the situation. But it's all the incentive in the world to sue. It's not happening that often. Why is that? And I think it's that white people in this country have been so brainwashed and so beaten down by years and years of anti-white discrimination. The guilt is so deeply embedded into their psyches that many of them honestly believe that they deserve to be discriminated against. Yeah, because, again, everyone knows it's discrimination. Everyone knows it's racial discrimination. It's unconstitutional. It's illegal. It's not even close to legal to do this. You cannot do this. But and everyone knows that. Everyone involved knows it. Everyone in the country knows it. We all know it. This is like we're all walking around. This is one of the many fictions that we all just sort of walk around with and many people tolerate, even though we all know that it's total nonsense. But the people who are proponents of this kind of discrimination, they will say, especially the non-white proponents, their argument basically is, well, yeah, it's discrimination, but you deserve it. You deserve it. It's what you get. You have it coming. Now, needless to say, that argument, that's not a legal argument. That doesn't hold up in court. That's not a constitutional argument, okay? There's nothing in the law, there's nothing in the Constitution that says, well, racial discrimination is not allowed unless they deserve it, unless they have it coming. You know, unless you have a blood feud with this group of people, unless you feel that your ancestors have been wronged by them, in which case it's totally fine. But, you know, of course, that carve out is not there legally, because if it was, then that's just another way of saying that racial discrimination is actually okay. Because guess what? All racial discrimination, or most of it historically, has been justified on those kinds of grounds, basically. That's all racial discrimination that it has existed everywhere in the world, including in this country historically. is always justified that way by saying, well, you know, normally I wouldn't do this to somebody, but these people deserve it. So you've got the non-white proponents and whose argument is that they deserve it. And then you've got all the white people who go along with it because they have come to believe that. They have come to believe that, that they actually do deserve it. You know, I think we kind of assume that white people put up with this because they're afraid of speaking out. They're afraid of filing the lawsuits. They're afraid of being labeled racist. And, you know, that's part of it. That is a factor, I'm sure. But the far more disturbing fact is that many white people endure the discrimination because they honestly believe that they deserve it. The anti-white propaganda has metastasized in their minds, and they now have a terminal case of white guilt. And they don't speak up against it, and they tolerate it because they think, well, I deserve this. I'm white. This is, I have it coming. This is what they think, especially in a state like Vermont. It's like every white person there, it's no surprise that in Vermont no one is suing. Because all the white people there, it's like, well, of course, I'm white, I'm evil. Of course I deserve this. That is how just deeply embedded the anti-white propaganda and discrimination is in our society. Okay, we just talked about the Princeton hunger strikers yesterday, and I really hadn't planned on giving these people any more attention, but this, I can't not play this clip. I can't not play it. So here it is, watch. This is absolutely unfair. I am being punched in the head right now. I have a headache. My head is throbbing. This is absolute. What is happening? The fist that is attached to my own arm, which is attached to my body, is slamming into my head. And this is unfair. This is completely unfair. I blame everyone but myself for this. It's basically what they're doing. It is unfair. They are refusing to eat, and therefore they are hungry. It is unfair that they should have to endure the inevitable physical consequences of the thing that they are intentionally doing to themselves. When actually, you know, of course, not only is that not unfair, it's actually the most fair thing in the world. The most fair thing I've ever heard of is that someone goes on a hunger strike and now they're hungry. I can't think of anything more fair than that. That's, you have done a thing, and then the it's a result that is so obvious that it's in the name of the thing you're doing. It's called a hunger strike. And so you're hungry. This is unfair. I've gone on a hunger strike, and now I'm hungry. It's the level of entitlement is so psychotic at this point that it's hard to even understand what they're saying. Like, what do you want anyone to do about it? Eat. Eat some food. No one eats the food all around you. Eats. What do you want us to do? Wait, do you want the university to tackle you to the ground and force feed you? Is that what you, do you want that? You want them to like shoot you with tranquilizer darts? And just put you on a feeding tube while you're unconscious? I mean, what do you want them to do? We've reached a point of entitlement. It's like, there needs to be a, and I don't like medicalizing everything, as you know, medicalizing the human condition, I'm against it. But you can make an argument for having something, and maybe we could call it entitlement psychosis or something like that, because it is it's a real psychological phenomenon, and it's very new. It's a new phenomenon where people have such a sense of entitlement that it has actually driven them insane. We have people who are so self-entitled that they have been driven to the point of madness. You know, this is what happens when adults come to honestly believe that nothing is ever their fault, nothing is their responsibility, they are accountable for nothing, they are responsible for nothing, and they deserve whatever they want, whenever they want it, all the time. When you believe that, when you've been raised to believe that, it actually, I think it causes almost a form of psychosis, and we cannot have a functioning society with millions of adults with this mentality. And I know we all, for years now, we have all liked to tell ourselves, we have come up with this wonderful, reassuring fiction, this fairy tale story that these sorts of people, you know, they're in college and they're very entitled. They're entitled little brats. But, oh, you know what? When they get out into the real world, everything's going to change. When they get out into the real world's going to straighten them out real quick. They're going to understand. They're going to learn some things out in the real world. We like to tell ourselves that. But as we kind of whistle past the graveyard of our civilization, but it's not true, unfortunately. Because while we have been insisting that for years, that all of these entitled college kids will get out into the real world, and they'll... No, actually not, because the real world is increasingly run by these kinds of people. This is one of the problems. We have a whole generations of people that are like this. Well, they take over the world eventually. And so the world, it's we're living in a reality that is, well, reality itself is not defined or governed by these people, but, you know, we live in a system that is defined and governed by these kinds of people. And so what does that mean? It means that, like, that girl right there, and we can hope that she'll get out into the quote unquote real world and become a functioning member of society, but probably not. Because we have a system that caters to these people. We have a system that says, like, look, if you're a self-entitled brat and you want to go around stomping your feet and having temper tantrums and believing that the world owes you everything, we have a system that says, okay, yeah, we want you to be that way. So we'll do everything we can to keep you like that. Because the people really running the system, they may not feel, you know, they may not share that delusion, but they're quite happy to have millions of people who operate that way, because those sorts of people are easy to control and easy to manipulate. Let's get to the comment section. If you're a man, it's required that you grow a beard. Hey, we're the sweet baby gang. When I put my robe on for my show, Judged by Matt Walsh, it's not just an official garment. It represents my authority as judge of one of the highest courts in history. It signifies a jurisprudence that will be studied by legal scholars for centuries. Now, you can't wear the robe, but you can wear the merchandise. Judged by Matt Walsh merch is now available at the Daily Wire shop. Get the Judged by Matt Walsh t-shirt and mug. Just imagine how much more justified you will feel being judgmental in a judge shirt and sipping from a judge mug. With this merch, I guarantee you'll feel just as good as I do, or maybe almost as good, when I wear the robe. Unfortunately, your judgments won't be nearly as important, but still, get judged by Matt Walsh merch at dailywire.com/shop today. So I told you this week about my new favorite show, which is the Australian version of the survival competition, Alone. And they call it Alone Australia, but it's really Alone DEI, as I explained, an unintentionally hilarious show. And here are some comments related to that. Simon says, being a survival enthusiast, I started the application process for this show, but as soon as I realized that they were promoting DEI to the contestants, I didn't proceed. There were more questions about sexuality and gender identity than there were about outdoor skills. Well, that explains a lot. I am not surprised to hear that. It comes through in the show very much. Another comment says, LOL, everything in Australia starts with a land acknowledgement. Honey, I'm home. This home was built on stolen land over 200 years ago from its true indigenous owners, whom I now acknowledge and thank and kowtow to. What's for dinner? I've heard this. I mentioned this show, Alone Australia. Each episode starts with a land acknowledgement. Like, they didn't even just do it in the season premiere and leave it at that. Even that would be stupid, obviously. But every single episode, it starts with a land acknowledgement. Not to mention the contestants themselves, like, very often thanking the land and thanking the people who protected the land and lived it. Like, the contestants themselves are constantly droning on about that. And I have heard this now from many people that land acknowledgements in Australia are extremely common, apparently. You know, even here in the United States, you run into the land acknowledgement thing. It's still relatively rare. You have to be in like a really liberal area and engaged in, you know, at some sort of event or something that's very liberal, and that's where you'll encounter the land acknowledgement. But in other places, Australia and Canada being probably the two primary culprits, like, it's just all over the place, constant. This constant reminder that you are on stolen land and that you stole the land from indigenous people, which is not true. It's not true, but that's the indoctrination. I'm an Aussie, and you nailed it, Matt. It's a woke, feminist, man-hating country. The natural beauty is still here, but our society is in the grip of the madness you identified. Yeah, I can see that now, and it's very sad. When I was talking about the impression I used to have of Australia, one thing I didn't mention is that was all that also came from, well, it came from like watching Steve Irwin and that sort of thing. But also there's a book called In a Sunburned Country by Bill Bryson. And it was published probably, I don't know, 25 years ago. And it's kind of a travel memoir about his time in Australia. It's a great book. It's very funny. One of my favorite books, actually, that I've read in the last, I don't know, past 5 years or so. And that book contributed to my impression of Australia as a rugged place with rugged and sort of eccentric people who, you know, the kinds of people you think, like, who else would live in a place like this? Where you've got giant spiders and snakes and all this, like, everything wants to kill you all the time. The kind of people that live there, you expect them to be a certain way. And that's how it came across in the book. I liked to believe that Australia was that kind of place. I preferred that what it turned out to be a fantasy. I like to think that there was some place on Earth like that, and it turns out that it doesn't exist, and I find that quite sad. Why has it changed, though, is the question. Here's some comments that offered theories on that. Australia is highly urbanized. If you look at it now, it's one giant desert, almost the size of the U.S., but with 1/15th to 1/20th of the population of the U.S., then you could actually come to the polar opposite conclusion that the only reason the population isn't way bigger is because everyone is hugging the safe, temperate coastal areas and no one actually is rugged enough to settle the rest of the country. Another comment sort of agrees. There's a reason why Australia, New Zealand, and Canada are suffering from the same woke affliction. These countries all have this small populations that are highly concentrated around a handful of dense metro areas. This makes it much easier for a tiny elite to capture major institutions and crowd out other places than in a country like the United States. This is an interesting theory. Like, it kind of, you sort of wonder that. It's like, why is it all the most beautiful places are overrun now by these leftist lunatics? Australia, New Zealand, Canada mentioned. But even within the United States, you find that. Like California, Oregon, We just talked about Vermont. Vermont is a beautiful state. I mean, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous. All of New England, beautiful area. But also very liberal. And why is that? Maybe it's we're starting to come to a theory here about how it turns out that way. And finally, Australian here, the answer to your conundrum is that we have a prisoner's mindset. We know nothing about freedom because we have never fought for it and therefore don't know what it is. We are subjects of our government, and the tough guy reputation we have is just a holdover from previous generations that actually had to rough it in the harsh environment. But now almost all of us are pampered weaklings with nary a spine between us. We have no independence, no autonomy, no working spirit, let alone a fighting spirit. We welcomed our COVID overlords with open arms because we were all too afraid and unable to even conceptualize the self-reliance that made our forefathers hard. R.I.P. Australia. Well, tough assessment. Pretty sad. Wish I had something, some positive spin to put at the end of this, but I really have nothing. It's just a sad situation.
Ladies and gentlemen, the anticipation is finally over. The moment we have all been waiting for is almost upon us. This Sunday, exclusively on Daily Wire Plus, my new show with Adam Carolla, Mr. Burcham, will make its grand premiere. In this show, I have the pleasure of playing Burcham's wife, Wendy.
It feels pretty great doing something for the community, right?
Now, let me give you a sneak peek into Wendy's character. Wendy is a force to be reckoned with. She's a top-tier real estate agent, a supermom, and a bit more left-leaning than I am. But believe me, it's a necessary balance to Burcham's old-fashioned caveman approach. Check out the trailer for our new series, Mr. Burcham.
Yes! Headshot!
Dad, my teammates can see your junk.
You're welcome, ladies.
First day of school means the bet is on. First one of us to get in some.
You suck, Mr. Butt-Chump.
Ah, deal got it. Rule number one, no phones in the woodshop. Fish it out after class.
I found some really great school uniform options to avoid misgendering.
Ooh, what about their allergies? Maybe those theys could be lactose intolerant.
No, we can't say intolerance. We have a zero tolerance policy for mentioning intolerance.
When I was a kid, men were men. Now everyone's wrapped up in feelings.
Real men stuff feelings down with red meat, cigarettes, and violence.
My name is Mr. Wolf. I solve problems.
You know what it takes? Balls. Eyeballs.
He's gonna say that we're too young.
Well, actually, I was gonna say you're too fat.
Keep my wife's name out of your damn mouth.
You and the geriatric Girl Scouts will be passed out in an hour.
Pass mommy the wine. The bottle.
Don't make this a prison hug.
Richard Burcham.
Burcham?
Burcham.
Mr. Burcham.
Hey, Burcham.
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 Watch Mr. Burcham, an all-new animated series from Daily Wire Plus.
Let the record show I'm a dick.
Premieres May 12th.
Watch the series premiere of Mr. Burcham for free only on Daily Wire Plus. Mark your calendars for this Sunday night, May 12th. You're gonna.
Burgers are one of the most popular foods in America. You've probably eaten one recently, and you're definitely craving one now that we're talking about it. Make this summer one to remember with Good Ranchers. Right now, listeners will get free Wagyu burgers for a year. If you haven't had their American Wagyu burgers, I was just telling people here in the office, you're definitely missing out. My mouth is watering just thinking about it. Simply go to goodranchers.com and subscribe to any of their custom curated boxes filled with 100% American beef, chicken, pork, or wild-caught seafood. Use code DAILYWIRE at checkout to claim your free American Wagyu burgers for a year. Not only is this a $400 value, but you'll also get a free bacon butter gift that's the perfect bacon topping for any burger. And in case you needed any other reason to support Good Ranchers, they support Paralyzed Veterans of America. Every order you make saves American farms and directly supports American veterans. Change the way you buy your meat today. Go to goodranchers.com and use code DAILYWIRE to claim your free burgers for a year and support veterans this Memorial Day season. That's goodranchers.com. Use code DAILYWIRE. Good Ranchers, American meat delivered.
Love it.
This week, a band called TX2, though it may be pronounced T times 2, I'm not really sure and don't care enough to check, but Anyway, they proudly posted to Twitter a clip from a recent song of theirs. It's a song meant to attack, among other people, the Republican governor of Tennessee. And they wrote in the caption, quote, "This is what punk is about. A year ago, we wrote a song and named it after a governor in Tennessee who was trying to pass laws banning drag shows slash affecting gender-affirming care. We called out several governors by name to spread awareness. Hashtag punk, hashtag punk rock, hashtag LGBT, hashtag LGBTQ, hashtag drag queen, hashtag drag shows, hashtag rock." Now, you might expect, based on the flagrant overuse of hashtags, that this band is comprised of 64-year-old boomers. Turns out that they aren't that old, although they aren't really all that young either. Before we listen to this clip, let's also take a moment to admire their courage in calling out several governors by name. I mean, it's one thing to call out governors vaguely and generally, but by name? You said the names of Republican governors? Now that is brave. That's bold. That is hashtag courageous, hashtag punk rock, hashtag rock and roll. I mean, it's a pretty dangerous game to call out Republican governors by name, after all. That's like going after the mob. The only difference is that Republicans won't have you beat up or have your family killed or cause you any harm of any kind at all. Not that this song would be worth a response anyway from the governor of Tennessee or anyone else. I'm only going to play the clip because it will be enjoyable to make fun of. And also, there is an underlying point to make. But here it is. Watch.
Put a bullet in a kid's head, think they got a sickness, and they're not dressed up straight. But what happens in the closet doesn't matter if you profit from the flag of the USA. You're too old, you do as you're told, you base your life off a nation's scroll. Out there burning witches, filling up the ditches, tell me can I still be saved?
So there it is, that's what punk rock is about, we're told. It's about that. A middle-aged man in a dress reciting milquetoast liberal talking points harvested from a YouTube comment section in a song that sounds like Walmart brand My Chemical Romance circa 2003. That's punk rock. Which is to say, punk rock is dead, if that's what it is. Now that song, by the way, is called No Love Like Christian Hate. And I tell you the name of it just in case you happen to have a terrorist imprisoned in your garage and you need to torture him to find out where he planted a bomb before it detonates and kills 10,000 people. That would be the only imaginable circumstance where anybody would want to play that song on purpose. And we don't need to harp on this fact. I mean, obviously it's a terrible song. It's the kind of thing that makes you envy the deaf. You know, it makes you long for the life of maybe the naked mole rat, which lives underground and can neither see nor hear, yet manages to navigate somehow. I'm not really sure how. It's a discussion for a different day. But putting aside the general badness of the song, the more salient point is how it reveals the difficulty faced by liberal punk bands and by liberals in general. They want to fashion themselves as rebels, as mischievous troublemakers, as those who rage against the machine. But the problem is that they agree with the machine on nearly every point. I mean, they are the machine, at least an appendage of it. So here's a general rule of thumb. You are not a rebel or punk rock if you are saying things that would be happily affirmed by every Fortune 500 company, along with academia, the corporate media, and the entire federal government. Like, you could take the lyrics from the clip that I just played, and with maybe only superficial changes, drop them right into a sensitivity training session conducted by the HR department at the corporate headquarters of Procter & Gamble. Indeed, there is nothing in that song that the head of HR at Procter & Gamble would object to. In fact, I wouldn't be entirely surprised if some HR department somewhere in corporate America has already incorporated this exact song into one of their workshops. That would not surprise me at all. Now, there is no real way around this problem if you're on the left. I mean, this is the burden of wearing the crown. You won the culture, or your parents did, rather. And now everything you believe is exactly what is professed by the most powerful people in the country. Like, face it, that's how it is. You can count the FBI as your ideological allies. You have the politics of a generic bureaucrat. Your whole ideological program could be found laid out in print inside a pamphlet in a middle school guidance counselor's office. And that's how thoroughly you have your ideology dominates the system. And this is nothing to lament exactly. It means you have power. It means you are the victors. But it also means that you aren't cool, and you certainly aren't punk rock. You are the ones defending the machine, not raging against it. You aren't trying to take down the system. You want to strengthen the system and fortify it. And this is why conservatism really is the new punk rock, as Paul Joseph Watson has observed. Now, when I say that, that doesn't mean that conservatives have been especially good at harnessing this rebellious energy and using it to their advantage. Conservatives in general aren't very good at punk rock, and I mean that in the general sense, not just that they aren't good at making that kind of music, though they probably aren't. I mean that conservatives, broadly speaking, tend to be somewhat clumsy and awkward in their roles as cultural rebels. And, you know, some of that difficulty is understandable. Conservatism is, well, conservative. You know, liberals can't stop pretending to be rebels even though they own the system, and conservatives can't stop operating as though they own the system even though the system hates them. So this role reversal has been difficult for everybody involved, I guess we could say. Be that as it may, you aren't going to hear any right-wing talking points from the HR department or any other department at any Fortune 500 company. It's not going to happen. There is no such thing as Procter & Gamble conservatism, though there is Procter & Gamble republicanism. That's only because liberals have won so thoroughly that their opposition party is a variation of themselves. Conservative principles, however, are outside the mainstream. They do challenge the system. You're not going to offend the system by cross-dressing and criticizing the Bible. You will offend it by professing belief in the Bible and in the so-called traditional gender roles that it affirms. Now, whether you can make a good punk rock song about that subject is a different question. Nobody really has successfully done it yet, but you certainly can't make a good one while delivering a lecture that would make Nancy Pelosi proud. And that's why the would-be punk rock band, whose name I've already forgotten, is today canceled. That'll do it for the show today. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Talk to you tomorrow. Have a great day. Godspeed.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.